The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Good morning and welcome to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Loos.
Good morning, John.
It's always a pleasure when Otto's here. And Otto's a member of the Project Independence Advisory Group and a regular co-host here. And as I said last week when David was here, if it's not for the co-host, this show really would suffer. I mean, what every co-host brings to the show, and we're going to find out because Otto's been asking questions already of our first guest, but it's very, very important. And just one quick thing before we get to Nicolette is Project Independence. 311 is the number we all need, but Project Independence is the Town of North Hempstead's initiative to help seniors age in place. And as time goes on, the services, which are always offered at the Christina Luce Show at the 11:30, are just staggering for the people. I mean, from social work services, for shopping, for transportation, to medical, for home repairs, for exercise, it's an endless list.
It's an unbelievable program, in my opinion, and it actually would keep me from moving from the town of North Hempstead.
That's the truth.
Because I am in the bracket where my day will come when I'm going to need a little more assistance, if you will.
Okay.
You know, moral support, guidance.
Right, I didn't even mention those things. Those things are there, too. It's amazing.
Exactly. I mean, the Project Independence doesn't necessarily do all these things, but what they do is they filter through all the stuff you have to go through to find out about things that are available to you.
Right.
You can make one phone call and tell them your issue, and they will get the answer for it.
They'll direct you.
Right.
And we constantly bring information to people, which is our first guest today, which is Nicolette Pace. And Nicolette is a nutritionist and a lifestyle expert. She is a radio talk show host. She's been on the show before. She has an MS, an RD, a CDE, which I don't know what that is, but we'll get to it.
Okay.
And a CDN. But bottom line, and we started talking just prior to the show going on, Nicolette does her work in the area of nutrition. And that's the most important thing, because somebody will read something in the paper, one article, and they change their life, and it's not necessarily the right thing to do.
That's correct.
So, Nicolette, you're here today, and I know you and Otto were talking. First, say hello.
Hi, I am so very glad to be back. I feel like a veteran here at this show, and I really empathize with what you're saying about seniors aging in place. I've got two 98-year-olds in my family as well, and we're doing everything in our power to keep them home and out and functioning. With nutrition, people like to kind of pigeonhole their views and try to avoid certain foods, saying they're bad and that they're going to cause damage. So that seems to be the easiest approach. So to talking about today, which is the cholesterol beliefs, right now the research coming out has turned really conventionally held beliefs totally upside down. You know, we are looking at cholesterol as being a bad type product,
right.
And people know of the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol. What's really interesting is that over the last 10 years, the research and the practice has changed completely so that it's almost upside down.
Wow.
Which is kind of scary.
Well, you know, this also takes everybody back to moderation, because you read something and say, okay, now I should have egg whites and thousands of them a day, and then next thing you know, egg whites are no good for you or something
right,
like this.
Right, right. And moderation is definitely usually the way to go, but the problem is nobody really knows what their moderation mm-hmm. is. So sometimes we use it as a scapegoat term, but in fact, you're really pinpointing that is really where you should be. I guess, for example, the LDL, that is the bad cholesterol, as it was termed. You know, things get to be very simplistic with the idea of people wanting to remember things. So
I'm going to interrupt you.
Sure.
HDL and LDL. So when you get your cholesterol, the doctor gives you both numbers.
Mm-hmm.
One should be high and one should be low.
Yes, that's what you've been told all along.
Which should be high?
Well, the HDL,
okay.
High density lipoprotein, it means it is denser. It has more protein in it.
Okay.
And conventionally believed that it was protective for the heart, and the higher the better.
Okay.
The flip side is the LDL, or low-density lipoprotein, which is more fat component.
The lower has more fat.
Yeah, it floats.
Okay.
Fat floats, like the ivory soap bar. Like, just like that. So, you know, we were told that, you know, that's bad, and that was really where all the medications were driving the LDL number down. So when you take a look at all the research put together, it's not the absolute number any longer, but it's the way the cholesterol molecules function in the body. So this is really pinpointing as to why the LDL number is not as bad as previously thought in terms of it being high, and the HDL, driving it up as the goal, is not really the best way to go either. So they're pointing towards in the future, I would say over the next bunch of months, as to the way the it functions in the body.
Okay.
You know, just to confuse this a little further, you also have the total cholesterol, which if it was 200 and whatever, you were right on the edge of not being here anymore as far as the medical world was concerned.
Okay.
And then you have the ratio, I think, comes in there.
Right.
And then the triglycerides are another
right.
number that I got involved with my doctor.
Right. So it's what we call the lipid profile, and the total cholesterol would be like the umbrella. And again, what we were looking at is the ratio between the quote-unquote good cholesterol, the HDL protective cholesterol, and the LDL bad cholesterol. But now what we're saying is a lot of this is just almost archaic. It's a really blunt approach, and just because a number is, let's say, over 200 does not necessarily warrant the use of statins. We've got to look at other parameters that may be influential in protecting you either from heart disease and or other conditions. So I guess that segues nicely into what's going on with this fat. You know, fat was bad, and stay away from this and stay away from that. And this is really an upside down thing. But, you know, over the last decade, the saturated fat, the ones we were told to avoid, they're back in fashion. They're a new trend in many, you know, upscale restaurants. But lo and behold, they've changed their view on them. Butter, bacon fat, even schmaltz, if you're of that persuasion. They're back on the menu, and they taste great, and they're not necessarily all that bad for you.
Really?
Fat tastes good. There's no doubt about that.
Actually, as a weird statistic, in the last year I read this someplace, which has nothing to do necessarily HDL-wise, but bacon in New York City, like 40 years ago, you probably found bacon included in menus 2 or 3 or 4% of the recipes. Today it's in 90%. I mean, everybody has some sort of a bacon dish today.
Yeah, they're in bacon, you know, they're bacon sundaes, bacon this, bacon that.
Right.
You know, there is an overload on that. But that's a welcome thing. I guess from a culinary standpoint, because I do have a culinary background, is choose the right fat for your recipe. Fat should be used for flavor. And in addition to that, there are various qualities on different types that make them more suited to various type of cooking. So believe it or not, the saturated fats have what we call a high smoke point. So they don't necessarily degrade or break down when you're cooking at higher temperatures. And these turn out to be the most favorable types of fats, like the lard, the bacon fat, etc.
They don't break down.
No, they're best suited. Believe it or not, the lard is best suited for frying. And it also put in a lot of flavor. Most people's grandmothers was using lard.
My mother.
And those fried potatoes. They were delicious, and they were actually very healthy. Mm. Enter the newfangled processed fats, the polyunsaturated fats, the ones that we were supposed to be using, and the Criscos and all the other saturated fats. Well, that turns out to be extremely harmful for us. They are. They produce a lot of inflammation in the body. And a lot of these oils in their processing methods become even more, volatile in the body. So these are the fast food type oils. It's not necessarily that the French fries are bad. It's maybe the type of oil they're using, and it's your frequency of how often you eat them. So cottonseed, soybean oil. These types of oils are notoriously not as healthy for you. So, again, we're going to try to achieve some type of a fat balance and, strive for moderation.
What would be the top, any question I ask if you say it's not appropriate, what are, like, a top three oils?
I can't really name a brand, but
olive versus canola versus.
Well, with the olive, there's another thing coming out now. It's the processing methods for the olive oil. A lot of the believe it or not, and Italian olive oils are processed commercially, and they're not really extracted in the old-fashioned way, which was with the pressing. So they're also not as good. The canola oil, which comes from rapeseed, they use some petroleum solvents sometimes to extract. So, you can't necessarily just label these oils. You've got to look widespread.
I think there was something on 60 Minutes about olive oil.
Yes.
They had a whole thing where they went back to Italy to see how they actually made the olive oil, and there were different olive oils that were better than other olive oils. To me, right. olive oil is olive oil, but that's not true.
Oh, no. When I was in Italy, the olive oil over there is like glue.
Yeah.
It's yeah,
and,
powerful.
And in the Mediterranean region, it really depends on how it's processed. So, you know, it's the cheaply processed oils, you know, and the ones most often, honestly, for fast food. It is very inexpensive fast food. You've got to look at the quality of the ingredients. More than likely, it's probably compromised. So, you know, once in a while is fine. But, I mean, to believe that these are things you need to have routinely, you know, it's going to cause you some trouble. Plus, fat in and of itself is caloric. It is the most dense nutrient. You know, it's double the calories of proteins and carbohydrates. So we have to respect it.
Great.
Choose the right fat to do the right job for flavor, for the way you're going to cook. Try to use different things for flavor, and I think you should be fine with that. For the cholesterol, I would suggest, you know, you get more a better evaluation, both in the blood work and a discussion with your physician on what is really suited for you. You may have some familial, as they call it, a high cholesterol and some other factors that put you in a higher risk group, and then you have to look at those lifestyles. So we're not going to arbitrarily say, you know, stop taking all your medications or ignoring, but I did want to share with you that it's the information is going to be pointing towards how the cholesterol functions in the body versus just what that number is, and then, oh no, you're not going to make it.
What about I've always felt that the triglyceride number was one that indicated that you could have some serious problems. What's your perspective on that?
It is. It's true. The triglycerides, more often than not, are pointing towards an excess of calories.
Just do me a favor also. I'm sure people know what's the triglyceride number.
That's a component of the fat profile. It's basically one of the breakdowns of metabolism when we eat. So it will be part of that, like, lipid profile.
Mm-hmm.
Notoriously, a high sugar diet or a high carbohydrate diet or generally just too many calories overall will drive a high triglyceride number. So a lot too much alcohol as well. And usually with that, we have the association of what we call metabolic syndrome, which is a lot of times leading you up to the type 2 diabetes. Watching how many carbohydrates you require is really the answer, because it does cause a tremendous amount of inflammation. If anything, we have to rein that in. We do eat a tremendous amount. If it's not sugar, it's starch. This is the main thing we're doing in our diets nowadays. And all the foods are, you know, very palatable, and everyone finds them very yummy, you know.
As a senior, you're liable to end up being afraid to eat.
Right. And that's why I wanted to, you know, just kind of strike a middle ground. I've treated many, many older adults over the years, and it's really discouraging because things have been so pigeonholed. So I've had multiple people come into my office and tell me they couldn't eat seeds because they have diverticulosis. They can't have sugar because they have diabetes. They can't have salt because they have hypertension. They can't have broccoli because they're on Coumadin, et cetera, et cetera.
They can't drink
we've taken away all the food, all the quality of life, and the person is now malnourished. This is not the way to go. So, again, we're just trying to share with you some really hot-off-the-press information. And believe it or not, kind of go back to some older food ways. If you can control the amount, you should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I could see where complete confusion could set in as far as over the years you hear, this is no good, like don't eat liver, as an example. Now, I think I like liver occasionally, and I will eat it, and I'm still here. But even a minor thing like coffee, caffeine was no good for you. Now all of a sudden I'm reading caffeine's okay for you. You can have a few cups a day.
Yeah.
So everybody was going way back to Sanka before they had decaf, and then they went to decaf. And now all of a sudden I'm starting to read all over the place that, oh, yeah, a couple of cups of caffeine are good for you every day. So I can see where people who listen to us or anybody else can get completely confused.
It's true, but we also have to approach this from the American spirit standpoint. We tend to do things in extremes in this country, and I think that is a good thing.
It
is a good thing in terms of having that American spirit, and we feel like we can erase certain things by just doing a few things. They don't necessarily have that, believe it or not, in certain countries. But with this extreme way, we really are resistant on the middle. So if we hear something is really good, we just don't take it under advice. We actually go overboard on it. And by the same token, we tried to correct our bad ways, so-called, by going the opposite. So we were swinging in each direction, and those are the problems.
Well, really. We invent margarine as an example, and now it's really not that good for you.
No.
Butter is better.
Right. It basically goes back to, in my mind, very quickly, things that are natural.
Correct.
Yes.
And in moderation, which is more the middle way, which is a Buddhist philosophy. You go down the middle, not too crazy, go with natural, and you'll be fine. But right now, we have to take a break. We're talking with Nicolette Pace, a nutritionist, and we'll be right back. We're listening to WCWP.org.